content of this program is intended for those who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Lion Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the October 2022 issue of Lion Magazine. We'll begin with the President's message, entitled, Proud to be a Lion. Hello, Lions. I am proud to be from Bird Island. I'm proud to be a son and father, but I'm most proud of my role as a lion. Here in Bird Island, everyone knows us. It's a small community, and our club has made our presence known in many ways, most prominently by building a large baseball stadium, but in lots of other small ways as well. You don't have to do big things to make an impact on your community. Lions make a difference wherever they serve their community, whether it's a food drive, participating in the Peace Poster Contest, starting a community garden, or serving fun foods at the local fair. When it comes to showing your pride in the community, all you really have to do is show up. Be there for your community in whatever way makes sense for your club and the community's needs. Wear your Lions gear while you do it. Take pictures and post them on social media and spread the word. We're Lions. We're here to help, and we are proud to serve. Yours in service, Brian E. Sheehan, the International President of Lions Clubs International. And next, we have several great articles from our features department, so we're going to begin with A New Frontier. First ever artificial vision system is in human trials. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for vision. In early February of 2022, a team of researchers successfully implanted a first-of-its-kind artificial vision system into the brain of a blind volunteer. The intracortical visual prosthesis, or ICVP, bypasses the retina and optic nerves and connects directly with the visual cortex, creating the potential for those without vision to gain a perception of the world around them. The surgery is an exciting new step in the frontier of vision research, and it came together after decades of work and years of collaboration by some of the world's leading experts in that field. The multidisciplinary, multi-institution team is made up of bioengineers, surgeons, psychologists, vision specialists, and Lions. The brain works as a powerful processing system and receives millions of nerve signals from the eyes. But if the eyes are no longer able to communicate with the brain, researchers have found they may be able to intervene by bypassing the eye and optic nerve and going directly to an area of the brain called the visual cortex. The team that developed the ICVP system was led by Philip R. Troik, Executive Director of the Pritzker Institute of Biomedical Science and Engineering at the Illinois Institute of Technology, also known as ITT, and Professor of Biomedical Engineering at ITT. The surgery represents the culmination of nearly three decades of research dedicated to working to provide artificial sight to those with blindness due to eye disease or trauma. Since many individuals affected by total blindness do not have intact retina or optic nerves, but retain the visual cortex, or the area of the brain that allows people to see, an intracortical visual prosthesis may be the only possible advanced visual sensory aid from which they can benefit. The ICVP uses a group of fully implanted miniaturized wireless stimulators to create artificial vision. While there is currently no cure for blindness, the ICVP offers a promising first step in helping those with complete vision loss to begin to see, or really, to perceive. While there are many different kinds of sensory substitution devices, it's not the same as vision, says Troik. There are other tangible benefits to vision and to your brain processing vision. It's not about the E on the eye chart. There's a strong longing for that visual input. Dr. Philip Troik didn't set out to change the lives of people living with blindness. In fact, he didn't really intend to change anyone's life. He was just interested in circuits. As an undergraduate studying electrical engineering at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, Troik made a connection between the electrical circuits he was studying and the electrical signals from the human body. I got fascinated with the idea that there are also electrical signals in the body, and I wondered if those could be mated. At the time, there were no programs in the University of Illinois that put those two fields together. But when a professor caught wind of his interests, he told Troik, "Well, if you're interested in that, we've been working on a curriculum for a new field of instruction called bioengineering." And he handed Troik the list of classes to take. While my friends were taking flower arranging as their electives, I was taking physiology, Troik says. But after a short stint in industry, by the time Troik reached graduate school at the University of Illinois at Chicago, there was an established bioengineering program. He then realized that in order to work in cutting-edge research investigating the ideas that most excited him, he had to get a Ph.D. Not because I thought it would make me so much smarter, but because it was the way to do what I wanted to do. And what he wanted to do was integrate electronics with the human body to help people. What Troik developed in collaboration with his colleagues represents an exciting new step in giving those without vision the chance to see. And when the time came to do a clinical trial, the ICVP team knew they wanted to do a special kind of study. And not just special because of the device they were testing, which was unlike anything done before, but they wanted the actual process to be different. They knew they were asking people to put their own health and safety at risk, to add knowledge to the field, knowledge that the participants themselves likely wouldn't gain much from. The technology was still in its beginning stages, and the first participants would undergo many hours of testing, which would help the researchers understand how the device was working. This initial testing would provide crucial information that the team could use to further refine that technology. They wanted the participants to really feel like they were an integral part to the research team, because they were. "They're very much like explorers," says Troik. "We genuinely view in that way. Just the vocabulary sets the tone for how we would like our study to be seen and to be remembered." Troik has learned a lot during his career in biomedical research, and perhaps the most important thing he's learned is that you have to speak to people who would be using your product or device. "The participant can tell you things you've never thought of," he says. He recalls an encounter he had some years ago when discussing a prototype for the ICVP with a man at the Chicago Lighthouse. The man, who was blind, asked what the device would look like outside his head. Unsure at the time what it would ultimately look like, Troik said, "You can always wear a hat over it." I don't wear hats," the man said. The conversation made a lasting impression on Troik. Often, engineers can get caught up in the workings of their devices and forget to consider the humanity of those they're creating the devices for. "Why should we think that people who are blind don't care how they look?" Troik says now. "Everyone cares about how they look." And though it's through that lens that Troik approaches all the work that he does. The entire ICVP team considers participants in their study to be a vital part of the process, and Troik uses language to make that clear. "We call them the astronaut readiness force," he says. Brian, a lion from Indiana, has never been one to toot his own horn. While he isn't the type to seek attention, his good humor and easy demeanor make it hard not to like him. Growing up in a small town in Indiana, Brian had plenty of friends, but it wasn't until after high school that he met the love of his life. Tracy grew up just down the street from him, but the two went to separate high schools and had never met. It wasn't until he started showing up at the neighborhood pizza shop where she worked, and still does today, that he was able to win her over. "It was my charming personality," he says jokingly, as to how they fell in love. Tracy, who has a quiet, understated sense of humor and quick wit, laughs at this. I liked his self-confidence, she says. He seemed to know what he wanted, and he came up with a plan to achieve it. He still does that. He's good at thinking through how to solve a problem and then implement it. It was those problem-solving skills that came in handy when, nearly 30 years into their marriage, Brian's life got a little darker. Brian had a genetic condition that makes him more susceptible to detached retinas, and at age 17, between his junior and senior year of high school, his retina detached in his left eye. He lost sight in that eye, but it didn't seem to slow him down. At 21, he was playing basketball with some friends and took a basketball to the face, which detached the retina in his right eye. Thankfully, surgery was able to reattach it, and he went about his life as an avid cyclist, scuba diver, and musical instrument manufacturer. Then his luck changed. May 21st, 2016, was the day I went blind, he says. I can tell you the exact day. I went to work at 5 in the morning and began to notice something was wrong. By 10 a.m. that morning, I was legally blind. I currently have no vision whatsoever. What brought Brian to this place is a long road. It began with a floaty in the corner of his left eye on the day of his son's graduation from college. He waited to mention it to his family, not wanting to ruin the day. By the time they returned home, his optometrist took one look and sent him directly to an eye surgeon who lasered it and went back to work and sent him back to work the same day. Brian assumed all would go on as normal. He assumed it would be like it was 30 years ago when a simple surgery fixed the problem. But 2 weeks later, his retina came loose again. His surgeon did another reattachment using the scleral buckle method, but a few days later, it became detached again. Turns out there was a microscopic pinhole in the retina that enabled fluid to get behind his eye. The surgeon in South Bend didn't have the equipment to see the pinhole, so he sent Brian to Michigan. What followed was a 2-year ordeal in which Brian endured multiple surgeries and painful procedures, all in the hopes that he would eventually regain his vision. He never did. After each surgery came a lengthy recovery period, during which time Brian was legally blind. Each time they prayed that Brian would heal. When Brian was waiting to recover after a successful surgery at the University of Michigan, he developed an infection in his cornea. It was Labor Day weekend, 2016. That was when Tracy and Brian realized it was time to start planning for a scenario in which Brian would not regain his vision. First and foremost, he needed to get some skills to learn how to navigate daily living as a person without sight. Tracy spent hours searching for programs. There was a woman who helped folks in northern Indiana, but she was overloaded and could only help Brian about 2 hours per month. While he learned some useful things with her, it wasn't enough. In the summer of 2017, Brian's uncle, Lion Edward Ressler of the Marietta East Cobb Lions in Georgia, came to visit. When he asked Brian what kind of training he'd done, Brian told him that it had been hard to come by. Ressler had some knowledge of what was available from being a lion and worked with his connections. By September, Brian was attending training with the Vision Rehab Services of Georgia. Through a personal donation by Ressler, Brian was able to get about 12 days of training, what would have taken him nearly 5 months to get through other services. Tracy and Brian were grateful for the opportunity, but what he realized after that week and a half was just how much more education he needed. They made the decision that Brian should attend the Colorado Center for the Blind, one of the 3 national training centers sponsored by the National Federation of the Blind, or NFB. The Littleton facility offers students a 6 to 9 month program that immerses them in the experiences needed to feel confident handling independent living as a person without sight. Training includes cane travel, braille, home management, technology, wood shop, home maintenance, and navigating a city using public transportation. Students who have some residual vision, as Brian did at the time, are required to use sleep shades during their coursework so they can learn how to navigate the world even if their vision eventually deteriorates. Brian did very well. He was determined, very, very determined, more than I've seen anybody, to do this for himself, says Vicki Hedrick, the former residential manager at the Colorado Center for the Blind. When Brian and Tracy were first looking for help navigating the world after he lost his sight, the lions in his hometown weren't sure how to help. They wanted to, but only knew about the eyeglass and leader dog program. Brian was a long way away from qualifying for a leader dog. Eventually, Brian realized he could help. I knew I wanted to get involved somewhere and thought the lions were a good place to start. He figured what better way to get information out there than to become a resource with and through his local Lions. Now, if someone who is blind or visually impaired comes to our club, they could put them in touch with Tracy and I, and we could offer our knowledge and support with the help of our club. It turned out to be a very good match. Brian is just the right personality for it. Not only has he found kindred spirits in the jokesters that make up his club, but he's an active recruiter. He insists on wearing Lions gear to all his research appointments. I could get fined if I don't, he says, referring to the way his club raises money for administrative costs by, quote, slapping each other with fines for anything from going on a vacation to having a grandchild. While many members of the research team are Lions, Brian works on the ones who are not. So, are you a lion yet? He'll casually ask between tests. Most importantly, Brian inspires the club, the Bogo Lions, to do more and show up wherever they can. In his 50s, he's one of the younger members, and he knows they need to be actively recruiting younger people into the Lions. Some might say that Brian is showing up for more than just his own community. By volunteering for the ICVP project, Brian is showing up for all people without sight. I'm not doing this for me, he says. I know I won't have my vision restored. That's not what this is about. But hopefully this will be the beginning, and one day, maybe someone else could have that. While there are still years of testing and refining to be done, for now, you might say that the eagle is landed. And I did abridge that article for time, but you can find the entire article out on www.lionmagazine.org. Our next article is The Main Problem, and that's spelled M-A-N-E. This lion's got a collection of lions to contend with. Among the calming words of love that Albin Rothermel uttered to his wife in the painful days leading up to her death on December 12, 2021, was the following promise. I will not discard the lions, he told Bertha, who went by the name Bibi, and who would succumb to lung cancer at the age of 72. Rothermel, a retired flooring salesman who lives in western Massachusetts town of Dalton, doesn't regret making that promise, but he's still struggling to fulfill it. There are more than 5,000 lions in this house, he said. Inside his two-story home in a working-class neighborhood is a tawny yellow world of manes and muscle, teeth and tails. That's because his beloved Bibi collected anything and everything made in the image and likeness of lions. The collection includes statues inside and out, stuffed animals, rugs, a laundry hamper, clothing, and more. Does anyone out there want 5,000 lions? They're yours, maybe, but on the proving to be difficult condition that you promise they will be displayed for public enjoyment. Indeed, Rothermel says he's not looking to sell the collection or to otherwise profit from it. He refers to this matter that has consumed his widowhood as the lion issue. Rothermel has reached out to local politicians, but they're flummoxed. He's reached out to a local museum, which initially showed what he refers to as interest and intrigue, but no commitment. He reached out to MGM Grand, they of the lion logo, but hasn't heard back. He has piqued the interest of the Lion Habitat Ranch, a lion sanctuary in Henderson, Nevada. Rothermel even recently flew there to investigate. But again, no commitment. A woman who runs a tiger rescue sanctuary in Tennessee has also shown interest. Rothermel flew down there to meet her, too. She'd love to set up time to do a display of Bibi's collection, but she's still trying to secure some neighboring property to make it happen. The lion issue remains an issue. I don't have the time, money, or ability to expose the collection the way I would want it to be exposed, says Rothermel, age 76. If I could create a museum and had that kind of money and time, I would, but I don't. With all these lions, it only stands to reason that Rothermel would join the Lions Club, which he did following Bibi's death. It's natural, he says. It fit in with my values, which are oriented to doing good to others. Doing good for others includes doing good by the promise he made to Bibi, whom he first met in the late 1990s. Both were divorcees, he a father of 5 grown children and she the mother of 2 grown children. A maintainer of Maine's, a professional hairdresser, Bibi was a red-headed former biker gal with a collection of lions dating back to her teen years. Why lions? They're endangered, and so are the qualities that define them: beauty, individuality, and dignity. The flooring salesman fell in love with a lioness. She chose me, Rothermel says. She won my heart. In 1999, on their way back east from her native California, Rothermel and Bibi were married in Las Vegas. They then settled in Dalton, a man, a woman, and a lion collection. The lion collection, in many ways, was Bibi, he says. No need to count the ways, but suffice it to say, Rothermel aided and abetted in the form of many lion gifts over the years, including 2 black marble lions parked on the front lawn, each worth about $2,000 US apiece. At least 25 to 30% of the collection, quote, has significant value, he says, and that's what I really want to protect. He welcomes ideas. I do not try to make promises I don't believe I can keep, he says. In between organizing the lions, the gentleman lion from Massachusetts has assembled a memory wall that includes photos of Bibi and him together throughout the years and a card she gave him upon their 20th wedding anniversary. She wrote in it, "I wish we had met 20 years earlier." He suspects one day that they'll be together again. He suspects the cosmos will roar. And our next article is entitled Doing the Dirty Work. Recycling e-waste helps club connect to its community. When Lions Dale and Sylvia McLeese began working with a local program to refurbish computers, they didn't expect that e-waste recycling would become one of their club's most important programs. Now, their Maple on Club, Ontario Club's collection events, held on rotating weekends in the summer, can fill a 20-yard shipping container with electronics in just 2 days. Discarded electronic devices are among the greatest environmental challenges, with over 50 million tons of e-waste disposed of annually. Electronic waste is often toxic, but it's also a source of valuable metals like gold, copper, and palladium that can be used in new devices. Collecting electronic devices serves many interlocking purposes for the Maple Lions Club. Some devices, especially computers, are refurbished for donations to help local community programs, families, and schools. Some are processed with the help of a local electronics recycler who pays the club by weight. With so much e-waste collected, it's by far the biggest fundraiser our club does each year, says Lion Sylvia. She stresses the importance of building relationships to the success of the program. We're just a handful of people. The only reason we've been doing this more than a dozen years is that we've developed relationships and a reputation, says Lion Sylvia. Those relationships include one of the largest recyclers in Ontario, as well as local schools who send students to work with the Maple Lions to fulfill their community service requirements that are required for graduation. The Maple Lions also partner with other Lions clubs to help them start their own e-waste recycling programs by connecting them to local waste processors. Altogether, Maple Lions have helped hold more than 30 collection drives in the past year. A network of support is vital for an e-waste program, but so is public interest and trust. One of the biggest concerns people have about electronic recycling can be extremely personal. Is my identity safe once my device is out of my hands? The Maple Lions are sensitive to that. With the customer's permission only, we'll wipe the hard drive, says Lion Dale. We guarantee data destruction. Recycling e-waste isn't easy work. Truckloads of bulky plastic and metal devices are heavy to collect and transport. Printers routinely spill ink and toner. It's sweaty wilt work, says Sylvia. It's not glamorous work. It's about what comes afterwards, and that's why we're doing this. I don't think the club would be what it is today without the e-waste program. And now it's time for some club news. We're going to start with October of 2022. From the Bossier Client City Lions Club in Louisiana put on their 69th football jamboree. It takes more than 500 volunteer hours to do this, bringing six area high school football teams together. Not only does the jamboree bring in funds to support the initiatives of the Bossier City Lions Club, but it also brings the community together for a night of high school football. In Oregon, the Dallas Lions responded to a request for glasses from the Oregon Veterans Home. The Oregon Lions Sight and Hearing Foundation offer a box of 80 different pairs, and Dallas Lions pick them up and deliver them to the Veterans Home. In West Virginia, heavy rains flooded two counties, affecting infrastructure in more than 100 homes. In response, the Lions of 29-1 District Relief Team joined other organizations to help residents remove mud and debris from their homes and property. The Colts Neck Lions Club in New Jersey hosted their 28th annual pancake breakfast, serving hundreds of pancakes and hundreds of patrons for just $3 to $5. Proceeds will help build a Braille trail in the Monmouth County Parks, enabling the sight impaired to be in nature and identify their surroundings. The Falmouth Maine Lions Club continued their project to park cars for sporting events at the Iris Network lot in Portland, Maine. The Lions park about 100 games during the year, raising about $70,000. Members of the National Federation for the Blind help by collecting the fees. The Weymouth Lions Club in Massachusetts raised money by teaching tennis lessons to people from 10 to 99 years old. Proceeds from the lessons went to pay for eyeglasses for students in the town schools and Massachusetts Lions Eye Research. The Visalia Breakfast Lions of California made a $1,000 donation to the Visalia Veterans Committee. The Visalia Veterans Committee is raising funds to restore the World War II Greatest Generation mural located just south of their town. And finally, the McKeesport Lions in Pennsylvania concluded their concert season over Labor Day with a series of concerts. Although fireworks were canceled because of rain, thousands came out to enjoy food and cookout favorites from the Lions Band Shell area of the park. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time, though. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. Lion Magazine is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.